It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The last time author Jonathan Oxier stopped by the program, he had summer reading recommendations for young readers. He recently spoke with WESA's Man of Letters, Morning Edition host Josh Rollerson, about his fall reading recommendations.
Jonathan Oxier, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks so much. Yeah, this is a very exciting time in every single year. Fall is the big season for publishing in general, but especially for children's books. And all of these fantastic books come out. And I've been reading a lot of them. This is always so fun to kind of catch up and read these books in advance. And there were a handful that really grabbed me. And so these are the ones I want to tell you about. And the very first one is this absolutely astonishing book called El Defo by the illustrator and author C.C. Bell. C.C. Bell, for those who remember, last time I was here, I talked about a writer named Tom Engelberger. C.C. Bell is Tom Engelberger's wife, and she is an illustrator and writer in her own right. She's done a number of picture books, including the Geisel Honor book, Rabbit and Robot, but now she's written something entirely new. And it is what we would call a graphic memoir, which is to say a book-length comic book that is a memoir of her life growing up. This is actually a really wonderful time for comics, especially for kids right now. Really, from like the 70s to the early aughts, comics were in a really bad place because they got very serious and very kind of, I mean, we would call it mature, but really it's just kind of really gritty and dark. And comics lost touch with their origins, which were about kids and about kind of being funny books. And and there's been this huge renaissance that's happened in children's publishing in the last 10 or 12 years, where children's comic books have really come into their own right in a new way. And we're getting away from superheroes with powers and capes and all of these things to use comics to tell all sorts of different kinds of stories. And El Defo, this memoir, is just an absolutely astonishing story about C.C. Bell, who grew up in the 70s. And C.C. Bell was almost completely deaf as a child. And for various reasons, she lost her hearing when she was a little bit later in life, so she could already speak. And so they decided to kind of keep her mainstream. And so she wasn't doing sign language. I'm not sure she even learned it, or certainly not at this point in her life. The reason they were able to mainstream her is because she got access to this brand new piece of technology called the phonic ear, which was just this, you know, back then it was very new and shiny, but it was this enormous box that she would strap to her chest, and she'd put these little electric diodes into her ear. And then it's about her kind of going, you know, she moved. She has to go to a new school, and she's the kid with the giant thing sticking in her ears. And very adorably, all the characters in this book are drawn as animals. So, of course, she's a rabbit with these giant ears that are not working for her. And it's really this just touching and slightly heartbreaking but really wonderful memoir about what it feels like to be on the outside, what it feels like to learn how to identify yourself. And specifically, El Defo is the nickname she gives herself. It's almost the superhero persona that in her imagination she wishes she could be if she were as clever and smart and triumphant as every child wants to be. And it really is a book of triumph about a child figuring out how to turn their weaknesses into their unique strengths and learning to reconcile that. I just loved this book to death. I think this is a book to remember. I think it's a fantastic book for parents to read with children. It's funny. It's touching. It's just masterful.
You know, and something else that's great about comics is maybe a way to provide an entry point for kids that haven't figured out that they like to read yet.
You couldn't have said that better. I think that's one of the values of comics. I think literature, you know, prose and comics do different things, and they're each an art form in their own right. But one of the things that's great about comics for young readers is it builds confidence, because there's endless context clues. And a child isn't as quickly daunted when they don't know a word, because they can see what's going on in the story still. And you're exactly right. It's really a perfect gateway drug to literacy. So the next book I have, speaking of gateway drugs to literacy, this next book is something that just came out. It's called Homer Henry Hudson's Curio Museum. And this book is a little different than everything else in my stack today, because this, Josh can see here sitting in front of me, it's a picture book. I come from a school that believes that picture books are not just for little kids. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the market has really pushed the age of picture book readers, especially in America, down, down, down. And the word counts have gotten much shorter. And they're beautiful books. They're wonderfully drawn, great little stories. But I feel like a lot of the great picture book writers we think of, like Chris Van Allsburg or William Steig, they were actually writing these picture books for older readers 10, 11, 12 years. Mm. And so when this book came out and I discovered it, it came out from Creative Editions just last month, I was really delighted by it, because it's clearly a picture book that's written for an older reader. And it's the story about this half-blind English bulldog in a little tweedy three-piece suit named Homer Henry Hudson. And he walks around with a cane, and his nose drips, and all of these wonderful details, because the art in this book is just magnificently detailed. These old school watercolors that really, you instantly can tell that they're not digital works. That you can see sort of the handcrafted nature of them, but they're intricate and beautiful. And this bulldog has this old schoolhouse that was actually picked up by a tornado, moved to another town, and slammed down to the ground. And everything in it, it has a crack running halfway through the entire building. So everything is cracked. He's turned it into a curio museum, because in his younger days, this dog has spent his life traveling all over the world and collecting these fantastical and wonderful objects. And there's a great mixture of almost Indiana Jones excitement as he's walking through this museum looking at the different artifacts he's collected. But it's all very fantastical, and the things he's getting have a whiff of magic and silliness to them. And it would be one thing to catalog these wonderful items, but the other thing is there's a story being told through these items that we're walking through, that we're learning about this dog and his own life and his own desire, even though he's old and retired, to maybe go back out on more adventures. And it's a wonderful book. It's got a real sense of weight to it, not only in its story, but again, the art is really the thing I think that makes this book stand out. There are not a lot of books that look like this. I loved the book, and I would highly recommend it for, again, a younger reader can read it, but this is a great picture book because it can read upwards to fifth grade, say.
Great. That was my question.
Yeah. Well, for me, again, I say fifth grade, but really it could read up to adulthood because that's what I do with picture books. The next book, I'm a little bit old school, so I always like to talk about one book that's a little bit older. And the New York Review Children's Collection has a fantastic series where they take books that have fallen out of print and should not have because they're wonderful. And they just released a new book called The Glassblower's Children. By new book, I mean it was published in the 60s. It's by a writer named Maria Gripe. Her husband did these beautiful etching illustrations in it. And Maria Gripe, she's from Stockholm, and in Sweden, she was a huge writer. And she actually won the Hans Christian Andersen Medal, which is the highest honor that can be given to a children's writer. But her books really never connected in the United States the way they should have. And this book is really the pinnacle. I mean, it's really probably the most wonderful thing she did. And they've just released a beautiful edition. It's called The Glassblower's Children. It's this really, really haunting fantasy story, sort of fable, fairy tale type story about a glassblower who he and his wife are a little bit dissatisfied and make an ill-fated wish in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it leads to their children being kidnapped by this lord who lives in a town called All Wishes. And this lord is so wealthy that he can basically grant, he can do anything he wants. And he has a wife who, before she can even think of a desire to ask for something, he's already figured it out and gotten it for her. And instead of making her happy and grateful, it makes her sadder and sadder because she keeps claiming he's stealing her wishes from her. And really, this entire book is this beautiful meditation on what it means to wish for things we don't have. And it ends up really, the ultimate idea of the book is this really profound notion that what we don't want is to have our wishes fulfilled. And more importantly, it's actually the act of hoping and wishing and yearning that makes us feel human and gives us a sense of fulfillment. And again, this book is a really haunting kind of fairy tale. It feels like it could have been written 200 years ago, except the language is very crisp and current, and it moves very quickly. But it's a beautiful book, The Glassblower's Children by Maria Gripe. I would recommend any lover of fantasy or fairy tale to check out this book. It's wonderful.
It sounds like it might be a welcome corrective to the tendency of, maybe I'm just talking about my kids, but there's a lot of wanting and wishing for and asking, making Christmas lists 6 months ahead of time.
Absolutely. And I think the thing I love about this book is it goes so much more into so much more territory than just be careful what you wish for kind of things. It really examines in very sophisticated ways what it means to want something. So love that book. The next book is going to be one of the big superstars of this fall season. It was just put on the long list for the National Book Award, and it's called The Green Glass House by a writer named Kate Milford. The Green Glass House is in the tradition of Ellen Raskin's Westingame, which is sort of the classic children's literature big house mystery story where you've got everyone locked in a house and there's a mystery to unravel. It's about this boy named Milo Pine, whose parents own a smuggler's inn where they basically hide smugglers who are smuggling goods. But it's the dead of winter, and no one's supposed to come. But all of a sudden, these six very strange people all show up, and they're clearly all very suspicious in their behaviors. Right. And this boy, Milo, decides to start poking around, figuring out who they are. And things get accelerated when things in the Green Glass House, this inn, start going missing. And so this boy has to kind of delve into this and figure out what's going on. And the thing that really makes this book wonderful, it resembles the Westingame because it's kind of got this sense of, you know, sneaking around mystery, but it is slightly less like a finely tuned mystery than Westingame. It is also a much more, I might argue, ambitious book, because what this book ends up doing is becoming this wonderful, amazing inquiry into what it means to be who you are. And one of the central ideas of this book is this boy, Milo Pine, is a Chinese-American child. He's been adopted from China by his parents. He's pretty much the only kid like him in this town. All of Kate Milford's books take place in this fictional town called Nag's Peak. And this is her third novel. They all take place in this space, and there's a lot of really rewarding connections for readers of all of her books. You can trace these things back. But this book is absolutely a standalone. And this boy, Milo, while he's digging into the pasts and lives of these other people, is also kind of being forced to look back in his own life and wonder about what it would have meant if he hadn't have been adopted and hadn't been brought to this place. And also, while poking around in these people's lives, he ends up uncovering sort of one of the great mysteries of this town and learning kind of some really crazy truths about some things that happened a long time ago. But the thing that makes this book really profound, and I think the reason this book is already getting some award recognition, is the way it handles that question of identity. Children, I believe, are consumed with notions of identity. Most children's books really are, you know, you think of like, actually, you're not mm-hmm. Cinderella, you're a princess.
Yeah.
These sorts of, you're actually Harry Potter the wizard, not right. just, you know, the kid at the bottom of the stairs. And we, as children, I think, fantasize constantly about having our sense of identity ultimately shifted. And this boy is searching for that. And the great thing that this book does is it's not afraid to deal with questions of race and things like that. And I wouldn't say it's messy in its ending, but it is not at all pat.
Mm-hmm.
And the book really leaves you with this very mature sense of he's never going to solve this because there's no way to solve this. We are all carrying this sense of what could have been and what is. And the tension between those is sort of what it means to be human. And I think, again, I think this book just masterfully does that, wraps it up in a mystery. It's in a great, memorable location. And it's funny. These characters and the space of the smugglers in is really a set piece for right. a stage for these wonderful kind of zany characters to interact. It's a delightful book. I couldn't recommend it highly enough.
And at a glance, it looks like a bit of a hefty tome for younger readers, is it?
Yeah, this is what we would call, and this is really my sweet spot because I write for this age too. So we would call this like upper middle grade.
Okay.
So the readers would probably be, for this book, the content isn't that grisly, but I would say about 9 to 12, 9 to 14. That would be my guess for this. And really, again, these are the, when I think of a lot of the great classic books, that's about the age range that really, those were when I was reading the most important books in my life, is when I was that little bit older. I was a strong reader, and now I was able to engage with some of these heftier books and bigger stories and more complicated ideas. And this book absolutely is in that tradition.
You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Josh Rollerson. We're talking about books for younger readers with author Jonathan Oxier. Jonathan, what else is on your list?
I've got one last book that isn't actually a traditional children's book, but I assume that most public radio listeners are not children.
You never know.
You never know. And I assume that maybe a couple of them out there are like myself, which is to say adults who love reading children's books. And so I wanted to throw out one last book for fall reading for any adult reader who enjoys reading kids' books. A brand new book just came out from Candlewick Press. It's called Wild Things. Wild Things was written actually in collaboration. It's a nonfiction book. It's by three separate writers who were reviewers and also kind of the preeminent bloggers in the children's literature world, Betsy Bird, Julie Danielson, and the late Peter Ceruta. And these three got together and basically they knew so much about the world of children's literature. And I think, I assume at one late night conversation, they all realized, you know what? These authors have had really messed up and insane lives and have done some really bizarre things. And there's a lot of stories to be told behind the stories, mm-hmm. behind these books that we all know and love. And so this book is basically a collection of, well, the subtitle is Acts of Mischief in Children's Literature. And it really is just an enormous chronicle of authors behaving badly and sort of these really juicy and wonderful stories of professional backstabbing and jealousies and things, and also just personal failings and feuds and all of the great stuff that we never know goes into books right. like Where the Wild Things Are or Goodnight Moon. And it's, for a lover of children's books, it is just a wonderful read start to finish. You'll sit down and then, 3 hours later, you'll look up and be like, oh my gosh, where did my time go? Because the book just moves at a lightning quick pace. It's delightful. It's fun. It's written in a very casual, because these three writers were all bloggers, there's a very kind of informal tone. So it moves very quickly, but it's extremely well researched, very, very smart book. And I loved it to death.
And suitable for kids as well.
This one probably
maybe in the
not.
Gray area.
This one probably, I mean, I think like a 12 or 13 year old, if they wanted to read
mature,
it, should read it. Yeah. But this is definitely a book for adult fans. So if you're a teacher, if you're a librarian, if you're a parent that just, reads a lot of books to your kids, this is a really fun kind of look behind the curtain at what went into some of these books.
All right. Well, Jonathan Oxier, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Jonathan Oxier is the author of most recently The Night Gardener.
Correct.
Well, we'll look forward to welcoming you back with more recommendations.
Excellent. Cheers.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.